Welcome to Craft Beer Radio, episode 527th on June 3rd, 2020.
Hey, everybody. This is the 20th anniversary show. And this song, believe it or not, was number one when we did our
very first show.
You gotta adjust the sound.
It's on the wrong. There we go. It wasn't on one of my physical sliders, so I was like, ah, crap, how do I do that? Then I remembered how to do that on the virtual slider. Yeah, our 20th anniversary show. I said June 3rd, and Shannon's like, that's not today's date. Well, that's the date we put out our first show. So, yeah, 20 freaking years.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been, like, looking at the things. If you go on our Discord, if you're not on our Discord, you should be on our Discord. If you go on our Discord, I posted the 50 largest breweries in 2005, which is interesting. I also posted Beer Advocate's top 100 beers for June 3rd, 2005. Oh. And it's different, but it's not as different as I would have thought. It was late enough that a lot of those early days whales on the general channel yesterday, but I posted that other thing. So it's up in the history a bit.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, so feeling quite nostalgic. And I think we're going to kick this off with, this is old news meets new news, what we're going to kick off with today. Because also on our Discord, we were talking about how at the World Beer Cup a couple weeks
ago. Well, let's do our first beer. Let's do the 90 minute first. I think we should start off with that. And unless you think that we want to, oh, you know what?
90 minutes, a big bitter boy.
I hear what you're saying, actually, now. As soon as I said it, I thought better.
Yeah. So, at the World Beer Cup, in the extra special bitter category, the gold medal was, raise some eyebrows. It was Sierra Nevada Pale Ale.
Mm-hmm.
And, Greg, you know, has some opinions on this, which we'll get into, but I thought it was a great crossover of like the kind of beer we would have had on one of our first shows.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And I want to try it too, because yeah, like you said, I have opinions on this and I do want to try it to cement whether those opinions are, accurate or not. There was an article that you posted, from VinePair about this. And I read the whole thing and, very interesting, well-written, good article about it. And I was like, I mentioned in Discord that I had two thoughts, mm-hmm, that I'm going to expand on. And the first was, this is a fucking travesty.
Yes.
That Sierra Nevada Pale Ale is winning an ESB gold. And the second one is, I kind of get it.
Yeah.
And when the first thing I smelled was malt.
Definitely.
The very first thing I smelled here was malt. And I thought about it and I said, you know, a Sierra Nevada Pale Ale is a pretty malt forward beer from what I remember. It's not a kind of pale ale that you would think of as today's pale ale.
I've never really drinking it thinking of a pale ale, something hoppier than your average beer.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been like super satisfied with Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. I thought it was a little unhoppy, but maybe I never drank it thinking I was going for an ESB. Maybe that's the magic hack here. So let's.
Yeah, because judges judge these blind. They don't know what they're drinking. Mm-hmm. And if you are primed to think ESB, will you taste ESB here? And I will pull up the category guidelines for ESB.
And give us a quick read.
I'd like to hear that.
So there are two kinds. There are the American style and the English style extra special bitter. I believe this was placed in the American style. So we'll go with the American style. Color amber to deep copper. In terms of color, we used to have that SRM sheet. I was thinking, what would this be? I don't even remember.
It's more
what
of a gold to me.
Yeah, it is more gold. I don't think you could. Could
almost
you call
amber.
That amber?
Almost amber.
Yeah,
that feels. But I guess you could. You know, maybe you take off some points for it.
Yeah, and for like homebrewing beer judging, visual is only 3 points out of the 50. So,
mm-hmm. Chill haze is acceptable at low temperatures. This is not incredibly well. Yeah, it feels pretty cool.
Pretty.
So, and there's a little bit of haze in there.
Yeah.
Perceived malt aroma and flavor, medium to medium high.
Yeah, it's definitely.
It's definitely in that zone for sure. Now, hop aroma and flavor, medium to medium high and typical of American or other hop varieties. I'm smelling Cascade for sure.
Mm-hmm. Motherfucker. You drink this and you think ESB, and it makes more sense to me than this beer has ever made.
Okay. It's really malty.
Yeah.
It's too hoppy for me. Like, there's a pithy note that I do not get at ESBs at all. Yeah. And that would immediately turn me off. So I'm confused now, because I thought that maybe it would be like, it's maltier than you remember. The hops are more subdued than you remember. But that note, I've never gotten an ESB.
Right. But when I've drank this before, and usually, I don't know if we've ever had this on the show.
Maybe not.
But and usually when I'm drinking it, I'm not thinking it. I'm thinking not thinking about it all that hard. So I usually find that it's a bit underwhelming, and I've never like noticed like the malt that I'm really enjoying in this flavor, where it has a nice. In my current perspective, it's a full malt that's kind of sweet, muffiny.
It like legit this malt bill, the way it tastes. I could see this, if you renamed it, being something close to an ESB.
And then it freaking complements the citrusy hops, like the orange goes right into it, you know.
That hop thing I don't get, though. Like, I feel, and maybe it's a Chico yeast, too, is not quite hitting me in the right way, but
could be.
There's something just that just strikes me as grapefruit pithy and orange pithy, and that I really do not expect to taste in ESB. So when I taste that, that really pulls me out completely. So I get it less.
I like the pithy comes late in the aftertaste. If you like, and you could take points off for that, but if you evaluate it like right on the flavor, I think that it's more fleshy and it fits better.
And so this is the English style extra bitter. Again, amber, deep color, chill haze acceptable. Perceived malt aroma is medium to medium high. Perceived hop aroma is medium to medium high without the typical of American and other hop origins. Mm. Perceived bitterness in both of these was medium to medium high. Mm-hmm. They both have the same exact fermentation characteristics. Low carbonation traditionally characterizes draft cask versions, but in bottled version, a slight increase in carbon dioxide content is acceptable. The overall impression is refreshing and thirst-quenching. Fruity esters are acceptable. Diacetyl is usually absent in this beer, but may be present at low levels. Diacetyl, butterscotchy. Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what this is missing, is a little bit of that. I don't know how to describe it. Like an ESB, especially if I think of like Fuller's, it's not like a toffee beer or a caramel beer, but there's like a vibe of it.
Yeah. You know? Body medium to full on the American, body on the English, just medium. And additional notes for American entries in this subcategory exhibit hop aroma and flavor attributes typical of hops of many origins, which may deviate substantially from the hallmark attributes of traditional English hop varieties. And English style entries in this category exhibit hop aroma and flavor attributes typical of English hop varieties. So I could see where this can fall under those vague. That's it. You mean, like, and then there's just, you know, the original gravity and all this other stuff. But this could fall in that very vague description.
Mm-hmm.
And as was noted in the article, this is an example of Sierra Nevada really knowing their beer, looking at all of the categories and seeing which one does this one fit best.
Yeah, that took the time to.
And if you're thinking about just that and you're tasting this and you're thinking, okay, it's an American style, so I expect the hops to be more present, and you taste this and you think, okay, I expect a malty beer,
Mm-hmm. I think it fits.
The more I taste it, the more I'm feeling not so much. But then again, I'm tasting more and more of it. Yeah. Where they don't do this yeah. many sips.
Yeah, but yeah, it would be like 2-3 sips, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of thing.
I it's a fucking travesty because ESB is one of my favorite styles.
Yeah.
I love ESBs. And
what's your favorite?
Well, I mean, Fuller is always classic, but I find most ESBs that I found on the market are really pretty good. There was one in Boston. I forget what it was, but I think they might be from Rhode Island or something, but it was so good. And I found it. I forget. But it was really, really delicious. Mm-hmm. So I don't remember what it was. But, you know, Fuller's is always pretty fine. And, you know, it's the standard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love the ESB style so much, and this is not to me an ESB. Like, maybe I'm not into the American style, but the ones that I like are the English style.
So in 2005, I mean, beer has evolved so much mm-hmm. since then. So do you think that, I mean, you did say that you thought it was a travesty then too. So I guess there were really good ESB beers back then?
No.
Or like, did you just feel like this?
I don't even know whether ESB was popular enough to be like.
Well, I mean, we Harpoon had their ESB,
yeah.
right? I mean, they weren't. Fuller's was better than any of the ones I can think of that were easily yeah. available back in the day.
So that one was available?
Yeah, Fuller's is an English okay. import.
Fuller's is, they originated the style.
Oh, okay.
And it was in the 80s that they did it. So like, it's not a really old style. It's a
oh, really?
Relatively
I didn't
new
know.
Style.
Was that new?
Yeah. That's what did you read the article? Is
that
all?
Oh. I didn't read that. I missed that part. Okay.
So it's a relatively new beer, new style, and certainly when craft beer was not as big as it is now, there were not a lot of people making British style ales in general. Everyone is just making pale ales and maybe some stouts and stuff like that.
I mean, brew pubs would have, you know, them occasionally. They would have those more than milds or best bitters back in the day. ESBs were kind of hoppier and more, you know, more closely related to what American pale ales were at the time. So
what's curious to me, I'm going to look this up, is what is the American pale ale, right? What, how does this fit in with the style of pale ale, what it's sold as? And let's see if I can find it.
I don't think that it's going to describe it as being as malt forward.
That's my expectation too, but I don't see what's going on here.
Isn't that one that's always available when we go to a concert?
It's
or usually
pretty widely available.
Yeah,
it's I like don't know if always would be.
But I mean, I feel like most of the concerts we go to, and we're limited to 5 or 6 beers
mm-hmm.
that we can purchase, that's one of them.
So for pale ale, I see there's an English classic English style pale ale. There is English style India pale ale, English style summer ale. There's also American style pale ale. Should we look at that one? Because that's probably what you'd think. American style pale ale, straw to light amber. I think this fits in terms of color there.
Mm-hmm.
Chill haze is acceptable. Low temperatures, hop haze is allowable. Any temperature. There's not a lot of really hop haze here. It's pretty clear now that it's warmed up a bit. Low caramel malt aroma is allowable. Low to medium maltiness may include low caramel malt character.
Yeah, see, I don't think it fits.
It's at the very
top. It's bready. It's not really caramel.
No.
Perceived hop aroma, high, exhibiting a wide range of attributes, including floral, citrus. It's not really a wide range. It's very singular.
Mm-hmm.
This perceived bitterness, medium to medium high. This is pretty bitter. I'd say medium. Fruity esters may be low to high. Diacetyl should not be present. Body medium.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they got a particularly diacetyl-y bottle of Sierra Nevada. Mm-hmm.
I drink this out of the can, so it should be...
Light-wise, it should be great, yeah. They only had the cans where I got picked this up. And the date? Is it in common date format? Looks like it was canned in February, February 3rd.
So, I don't know. I was more pissed off when I first saw it, and now, you know, the... I'm less like, but now that I've tasted, I'm more kind of pissed off. But I also, Greg made a good point, which is that there's, you know, I guess ESPs don't travel well, and there were just probably not a lot of good stuff in the competition, and this just sort of rose to the top.
Yeah. Didn't lose too many points for being off style.
Yeah. And so that gets into the weird thing of should they be able to do that?
Well, they will not award a gold medal if they think nothing is exemplary to the style.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, really?
And that's what, and that's another thing that bugs me is why would, if this is what's there, maybe I'm just so against the American style ESB that I, but if this is what's there, then this is the gold and I wouldn't be awarding a gold.
Part of it is you weren't in the room where it happened. So.
Yes. I wasn't a judge. I think that if anything, the travesty is why aren't there better and more ESBs being made?
Yes, agree.
And that's kind of the big takeaway is there should never be a case where Sierra Nevada Pale Ale wins ESB because there should be an ESB, a couple of them. That are way better in every way.
I shouldn't be able to go to D's and not find an ESB on the show.
Yes. Mean. And that's why it's a fucking travesty more than anything else. Yeah. ESB is such a good style. And for it to be awarded to Sierra Nevada Pale just feels like an insult. But again.
Well, it was 2005. So.
No, it was
2025.
Oh, wait. What? No, I'm so... 2025. I thought you guys were talking about that it won in 2005.
This year. This year it won. Yeah. For anybody who's confused, this is the 2025. We're talking about this year.
I'm probably the only one that's confused. My brain's dead. I worked all day. So. It's usually dead anyway.
Yeah. In 2025, there should be more ESPs out there. Better ESPs than Sierra Nevada Pale Ale.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Yeah, I imagine that in 2005, Sierra Nevada Pale Ale was kind of right in the middle of what a pale ale would be in their guidelines. Because it would not be, for example, a bunch of different hops.
Yeah, there wouldn't have been any of the Gen 2, Gen 3 hops, right? It would have just been, you know, you have Cascade to play with and Chinook to play with and other things, but... All right, so our second beer is another old, has a very warm spot in my heart and a keynote place on Craft Beer Radio. It's the first lager that I enjoyed.
Yeah, you were, for those of you who don't want to go back all the way and listen, and I don't blame you, it's a lot of shows, it's a lot of content. I'm sure that there's some AI scraping it that will be able to replicate our personalities and poorly. But yeah, you were very unlagery because, as you know, that was the beginning of the show was kind of the height of our beer snobbiness, I think, in terms of where we were thinking, because we did have that a lot of experience. And so we were thinking, well, you know, lagers suck. Ales are good.
Yeah. Dunning-Kruger in full effect.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Let's focus on ales.
So tell me about this beer.
This is Elliot Ness from Great Lakes Brewing Company. It's a Vienna lager. Same kind of style as Samuel Adams, Boston lager, more or less.
Oh, okay.
And I don't, you know, I just remember like having things like Sam Adams. It tasted like metallic and, you know, like not enjoyable. Yeah. And the first one that kind of was my gateway was this one here.
And I think that we came to a conclusion that the metallicness was sort of the noble hop, a sort of a noble hop thing that we hadn't gotten used to.
Yeah, probably a play of the noble hop spiciness along with the lack of esters from, you know, ale fermentation.
So Elliot Ness, 6.1% alcohol by volume, pretty high for a lager, but a Vienna lager, I guess it's around the side. I think Sam Adams is a little bit lower, but the hops are Mount Hood. Now, how noble are Mount Hood hops? I don't know.
I mean, they're not a citrusy hop.
Right.
I don't know their profile super well. But I think Mount Hood was probably a hop that was used by legacy brewers in America for brewing lagers and things like that.
And it's still being made with Mount Hood, so like...
Where do they get it? I've never heard of it.
Most of the hops are grown in Oregon or Washington.
Well, okay.
German Hillertau, that's where it originates from. Okay. So, yeah, noble.
Yeah, so it's probably, I would guess here, riffing off the top of my head, is, you know, there was a brewing history in the United States breaking German lagers, and they probably isolated Mount Hood and was using it for those kind of beers.
Malted with a two-row base, Munich, Cara 45, and Kernel 30. So lots of deeper, darker malts in here.
It's got that amber color.
Mm-hmm. Here's the ESB-looking beer, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Doesn't taste like an ESB, though.
No, it doesn't. Probably doesn't, because it's a lager, first of all.
Yep. The aroma on this one. Toasty.
Toasty!
Yeah, definitely toasty.
It's just what I want in, you know, like a...
It does smell nice. It's got this...
a citrus. I'm trying to pick up on the citrus.
Vienna lagers, for people who might not know, they're similar to Oktoberfest beers. Usually they're a little less hoppy than Oktoberfest beers, but that's just a generalization and not a hard and fast rule.
Yeah, I feel like... Martins can go everywhere. I've tasted Martins that go in all different directions. So,
has a really big, you know, toffee flavor.
I like that.
Has rustic
right up front. A lot of rustic bread and deep and dark bread, like from an oven. It's got that noble hop thing in the background, but the breadiness overcomes any sort of things. That's probably why it was one of the first, because like the spicy note is kind of muted.
Actually, I'm getting this late, like spice. It's almost like it's zinging burning on my tongue kind of spice. Anyone getting anything like that?
No, I am. And I'm thinking of my mom when I was growing up made this coffee cake.
Mm-hmm.
Every year for Christmas, and it's like very bready flavor, but it had that spice, and I don't know what it is. But it's reminding me of that spice that's in that coffee cake.
It's got a little bit of a bread pudding thing, I think, that kind of flavor.
Yeah,
and it has that lagery note, which is, you know, it's the body feels like. It's a bit more aqueous than an ale in general. So I feel like it's like rimmed on the outside by a little bit of water, as opposed to where an ale feels more full. But it also means that it feels more quaffable, more drinkable in that sense. It doesn't feel as heavy as it's going down.
Yeah.
So that's the trade off you make, I guess. You go, is this, you know, is it going to be better as a lager? Is it going to be better as an ale? I'd be curious what this beer tastes like with ale yeast.
Oh, it'd be way different. You know, it depends on which yeast, on how estery it would be, but the esters would bring it around. It'd probably be more like a dark wheat beer kind of vibe, you know, something along those lines.
Yeah, and not exactly, wouldn't be enough to probably be oversweet without more sharper bitterness. Because there's not a lot of bitterness here at all. At least not a lot of apparent bitterness.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Pretty tasty, though.
It is. And I'm tasting like a banana nut bread.
Yes.
Good call. Heavy on the nuts.
Yeah. Very heavy.
That's
on
what
the
she
nuts.
Said.
I don't have my
Too late. Missed too opportunities. Late.
Yeah, but I should. But it is a reminder to bring them up. So
turn your volume back up so you can.
Right. Hold on for what?
Da, da, da,
da, da, da. So sorry, everyone. There was a weird pause right there when I was trying to bring up Greg's audio sound. I was trying to change menus and I hit the pause button. We're back.
Jeff, you disappoint me.
I know. You'd think after 20 years I'd get the hang of this shit.
I would think.
But, oh well.
I like this. I mean, I don't know if I'd want to drink it all the time. But
no, it's a good six pack.
It'd be a nice thing to have in the fridge.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Put in the back and, you know, occasional pull it out.
I think it's definitely something we need to throw in the new fridge.
In the new fridge.
In the garage.
Well, so what did you want to bring up, Greg? Because I got a few things too.
Well, I did want to mention that, yeah, we don't, the post show from last from last episode hasn't been posted.
I see that. It didn't get sent from a Phonic up to the site. By the time I went to look at it, it wasn't in a Phonic anymore. So now it's like I got to pull it off this card and do the whole thing again. So I can do that when I do this show. So you'll get a special double post show.
Ooh.
Posted.
Ooh.
But I'm like, we're going to be recording here in a couple of days. I'll just do that. I'll just do the easy thing. But I still have it on this memory card. So
what are the best time travel movies?
Time travel.
I'm not sure I can name too many of them.
Back to the Future, obviously.
I mean, it's a pretty good movie. I think Back to the Future is up there, but I don't think it's my. I don't think it's the best time travel.
Is it a time travel movie? I'm trying to think of the name of it, but the where he's like stuck in the dimension.
Stuck in the dimension.
In between dimensions.
Buckaroo Banzai across the eighth dimension.
Cube.
Yeah. No.
Stuck in between dimensions.
Yes.
Okay, keep going. Keep describing.
I'm trying to think of who it is that's in the movie.
Oh, Jurassic Park.
No.
There's that time travel. I can't think of it right now.
It's not The Matrix, is it?
No. Mm-mm.
I think I'm wondering if the one I'm trying to remember is the one you're going to mention. It's kind of one that repeats over, like the sequence repeats over and
that's
over.
That's not Groundhog Day.
That is what is that?
Bruce Willis in it or something?
The Bruce Willis, that's a good pull because that is the movie I'm thinking of.
Which one is that?
But are you thinking of the Tom Cruise one?
No, I'm thinking of the Bruce Willis one. I thought
12 Monkeys.
Oh, no, I'm thinking of 12 Monkeys. I forgot that was time travel.
That is, to
me,
my favorite time travel movie. I think it's also the one it's the best one. I think it's the one that makes the most sense. It's the one that everything seems well thought out.
Interstellar.
Okay.
That's the one.
There's arguably time travel in that movie. I would not. Yeah, there is time travel, I guess, because he sends a message back in time.
It doesn't.
I mean, I haven't watched it.
It's time dilation.
No, but he actually sends a message back in time to his.
Right.
Daughter. Oh, does he?
Yeah.
Oh,
okay. Yeah.
When he gets into
he's like trying to. I remember him in the bookcase or whatever. Yeah, I probably watched it in 2014. When
it turns into a big bookcase because that's what's inside black holes, apparently.
I missed that deeper meaning of it.
Oh, it's Leonardo DiCaprio.
The
Matthew McConaughey.
Isn't
Matthew
your favorite movie? Your favorite time travel movie? Aren't all movies time travel movies?
Because you travel forward?
Yeah.
I mean time travel as a plot device.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. I forgot that 12 Monkeys was time travel.
I mean, it very much is.
Oh, Looper was the one I was thinking of.
Yeah, Looper, I didn't like. My friend of mine said Primer. I think Primer is way too confusing and not a very good movie. I get that it's like they really go into, you know, nerdy. It's very nerdy, but it's not that good a movie. Mm-hmm. Another movie that I think is underrated time travel wise, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Oh.
I mean, I think it does still hold up, and it's kind of funnier than it has any right to be, because it's less broad than you might think. It's kind of nailing its humor as opposed to being so, you know, big and broad. Whereas Back to the Future is an excellent, just, you know, four quadrant movie. It's got all the parts to it. So it's a really great adventure movie. But as like a time travel movie, I think it's, there's questions I have. Mm-hmm. There's questions I have, which remind me. So I was recently down to visit my dad, and we watched a couple of movies, but one of the movies he said that he wanted to check out because he hadn't seen or doesn't remember was The Matrix.
Really?
And we got through, the last night I was there, we got through like the first act before he kind of fell asleep. I knew he was going to fall asleep. It was later. But the first act still holds up totally. I think The Matrix is a really, really well done movie.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think that any of the sequels are worth any time, but I think that the original one is really, really held up. There is a story point that I realize does not make a lot of sense if you really think about it. Or if you, I just noticed it because it's very, it's structured very well. It has all the points you want in a well-structured thing. The characters have arcs. Things are well done. The thing is that the impetus for Morpheus and Trinity are both things that they say the Oracle told them. And they are at least Morpheus himself is quite, the first thing he tells Neo is like, you know, the Oracle told me that I'd find the one and it's you. When Neo sees the Oracle, she tells him you're not the one. And when Neo comes out, the first thing Morpheus says to him is, what you heard was for you and you alone. And it's like, wait a minute. You've been yelling about how the Oracle told you're going to find the one a bunch, but for everybody else, no, don't say a thing. It's like it felt very artificial.
Yeah. Unless that's just what people need to hear the moment that they leave the Oracle.
I mean, clearly that was what the Oracle had in mind, yeah. But that he would be so upfront constantly and telling everybody about what the Oracle told him and then telling Neo not to tell him what the Oracle told him.
I mean, there could have been an extra few lines that got cut because it was too much exposition, you know, where it could have explained
that. I don't know. There's a lot of exposition in that movie. There has to be.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, it could have been like, he could have said something like, I wasn't ready to hear what I heard at the first instant either. You know?
Yeah, yeah. But like, I think that I would have been more satisfied if he had said, the Oracle said it wasn't me, and there would have been either some doubt in Morpheus's mind or some lines about how, like, something to justify that very artificial, like, story point. It gets run over real quick because the movie is very fast, and all of a sudden, you know, Cypher is betraying them and Morpheus is captured, etc. But I just noticed that. What are we doing now? Oh, okay. So we're bringing up
the first beer we've ever had on a podcast together.
Oh, is that?
I think it's one of the first. I don't know whether it was the first one or the second one.
Yeah, it was. I think it was the first one, but the second one they don't make anymore. Our very first episode, for people who don't remember fondly, 20 years ago, decided to, you know, give this podcasting thing a try. I had discovered podcasting about 3 months earlier and was a beer geek. So I started listening to beer podcasts and felt that there was a need in the genre. There was a gap in the genre.
It's Britney, bitch.
They were either
that would be more relevant.
They were either like juvenile yuck yuck beer drinking podcasts. Or
there was one that I didn't like where they would burp on.
Well, there was one who had their hearts were in the right place most of the time, where they talked about the beers, educating people about styles. The name was Screwtops. Two problems with Screwtops. They're kitsch was to burp on mic. Mm-hmm. And they just didn't know what they were talking about. I remember yelling at the radio because they were just 100% wrong in describing what a milk stout was. So I can't remember what they said about a milk stout. I just know that they didn't know that it was lactose dissolved in the beer, you know, that kind of thing.
Funny, because as we mentioned, we didn't know much about beer either, but we knew a little bit more. And you knew a little bit more. I was pretty much a novice. Mm-hmm. And basically getting all my information directly from you.
Yep. So bought some microphones and an old Radio Shack soundboard off of eBay, or either eBay or Craigslist. I can't remember. I think it was eBay. And we did the show. It was going to be a dry run. We weren't going to post it. We're like, that didn't suck. Let's go ahead and post it.
So we printed out things ahead of time. So we had a outline.
Yeah.
I know that you went through and edited and took out all the ums and uhs and stuff like that.
Oh, I certainly had to for that first one. And yeah, we put it up. And the first two beers, just because what we had on hand and wasn't really planned to be the first show, were we had two Imperial IPAs. We did Dogfish Head 90 Minute, which is this beer, and Stout's Imperial IPA, which rest in peace, Stouts. They haven't made in about 5 years now, I think.
And, you know, and then we just kept doing.
Too dumb to stop sometimes.
All right. So 90 minute, 9% alcohol by volume.
It is.
Yes. So this is their 60 minute plus. So 60 minute is their sort of flagship IPA, and this is 90 minute. Based on, as I remember, how long the hops are in.
Yeah, they came up with this novel approach of continuous hopping. Typically, when you brew a hoppy beer like an IPA, when it starts to boil, you add most of the hops. With about 15 minutes to go, you add some of the hops. And with 0 minutes to go, you add some more hops. Their idea was to build a machine based upon an electric football vibrating game where the hops would just slowly trickle in the entire boil. So a few hop cones every few seconds would fall into the beer. So it was continuously hopped for 60 minutes for their IPA or 90 minutes for their double IPA. Or now they have a 30-minute session IPA.
Session IPA, that makes sense.
And then they have the 120-minute, which is
the triple.
It's a different beast. It was more of an experiment in what can they make the yeast do. So it's like 18% ABV.
What?
And the hops really don't come across as hoppy. And then there's also the rare, occasionally seen 75-minute, otherwise known as Johnny Cask.
Johnny Cask. All right. It smells boozy. I'm even getting a little bit of a fusel smell off of it.
I'm like infused.
Oh. No, yeah, okay.
I got kind of great or orangey hop aroma at first, and now the malts are coming through a little bit more. And there's the booziness.
Boozy, but there's a staleness to it.
Yes, there is. It kind of tastes like nothing. There's a little.
I haven't even tasted it. I smell a staleness.
There's a lot of cardboard in here.
I checked it. It's a sell by date, and it's in the fall sometime.
Yeah, October.
Yeah.
I would expect a big heavy malt backbone here, and I'm not getting it. I'm getting very empty notes and
I don't like this. Mm-mm. I don't know if it's just bad.
No, you're not wrong. I mean, it's not, it is what it is. And, you know, there's things in here which I'll talk about in a second, but no, I'm not surprised.
This tastes wrong though. This doesn't have a malt backbone at all. And I remember it being a malt backbone with a cloyingness to it because of its hiatus. And this tastes off. Like this has gone real bad.
Yeah, it just tastes.
I do not think this is what it was intended.
No, it's very.
I don't feel this is.
It's not even bitter. I don't even know how to describe it. That's a shame. So we have to
see. No, it tastes like what I think it's supposed to taste like to me.
Does yeah, it?
Absolutely. I don't think it tastes great.
Supposed to taste like,
I think it has its, you know, things to talk about. Like, it's quite bitter. There is a sweet maltiness in there, but the alcohol and the bitterness reigns on it. The bitterness just lingers in the back of your tongue, like, all day.
In their description, they say this: with rich pine and fruity citrus hop aromas and a strong malt backbone, 90-minute IPA created pungent, unapologetic flavor that led Esquire to call it perhaps the best IPA in America. Now, why
Which
would...
Which year did they say now, that?
But still...
1997.
Still... This tastes like nothing to me.
Yeah, it doesn't.
I've had this not too long ago. This doesn't taste wrong to me. This tastes like the beer.
It just sucks.
I'm not saying none of you are wrong. I mean, I'm not going to go as far as sucks, but I don't think this beer's off. I think this is the beer.
I don't buy it. The flavors they put in, brandied fruitcake, raisiny, citrusy, I get none of that.
I never got any of that. Marketing speak. Go on, Beer Advocate.
Fine. Let's go back
to the old days. Let's see what people are saying on Beer Advocate.
I'm sipping some more so I can see if I can change my mind.
You don't have to change your mind.
I'm just wondering if once I get used to...
90 minute on Beer Advocate is a 95 world class.
That's a travesty.
Most recent? Five, 4.37, 3.92, 4.5, 4.5. The first one has any text here was semi-sour, semi-sweet, semi-rotten, semi-refreshing.
There's no semi-sour in this whatsoever.
I think the reviews on Beer Advocate have changed a little bit since we last looked a decade ago.
March 4th, 2025,
definitely no
exquisitely
semi-sweet.
Balanced.
What?
What the fuck?
It's got a metallic
copper color, medium size off-white head. The aroma of pine, grapefruit, and malt taste follows the aroma. Strong hoppy bitterness, but is very easy to drink. Great IPA.
I don't even taste the pine.
I don't buy it. And overall, quite sweet, but very intense flavors and bitterness. And this doesn't taste sweet at all.
There's nothing sweet about
it. This is wrong.
It tastes like I put a penny in my mouth.
Yeah, this is not the beer.
And sucked on it for a little bit.
This is not the beer. This is a mistake.
We could try a second bottle if you want.
You have a second bottle?
We have five more bottles.
Pack.
Let's try a second bottle. Let's see if there's one in the fridge.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, because this is not right.
All right. So Greg is going to drain pour this one.
And so Shannon.
We should just stitch in what we said back in 2005 here and just paste it in.
I think this was the winner, if I remember correctly.
I think the Stouts was probably past its prime. I probably pulled it. I bought a case of that stuff and aged it, which you don't do with double IPAs. But that one had turned into a barley wine with age. I don't think it was quite barley wine when we did the show, but it was probably past its prime.
Not great, but I think this one's a little better, but also lacking.
It's the same beer, just cold.
Well, the other one's only out for like 10 minutes, 20 minutes maybe, I suppose. Mm. But no, I think that it being colder definitely helped.
Yeah, I am... This is not like what I remember at all. Because I remember the booziness, I remember it being particularly cloying at times because of its booziness. And because of the sweetness that was added to it. But I don't taste any of that.
I don't know.
I'm picking up on the sweetness now.
Right. I think this is a little bit better, but it's still not great. I think this batch is bad. And they made a bad batch.
Too high expectations for 90 minute.
Maybe, but I still, I mean, I feel like Well, I mean, we've tried two of them, and they're both that southern, and I don't taste any like particularly off flavors that would make me think that there is a spoilage or something.
No, no.
So,
I mean, for me, it's they've stuck with the legacy hop profile, which isn't as delicious as what we're used to these days.
No. I feel like this. We would have thought this was sucky back then too.
I don't think so. We were drinking things like Ruination and Arrogant Bastard. And
you were drinking things like Arrogant Bastard. I was only doing.
I was drinking Mick Ultras.
the universe of what hops can give you were very, very different in 2005.
No, but I just remember more malt here. I distinctly remember considerably more malt here. Maybe they cut back on their malt because of tariffs.
Could have easily been reformulated over the years, for sure.
Well,
I'm surprised that they're sticking with the pine, because can't imagine that that's what people want these days.
I know I don't, but I do have to say that this one does taste better, and I don't know if it's because it's just a better bottle, if it's because it's colder. It is definitely much colder than the one that we drank first.
What's this, Sam
Calagione?
Sam Calagione, yeah.
I think it's the cold.
It probably is.
If I were Sam, I'd be saying, how could this happen to me? I'm made by mistakes. It just feels like, come on, that's not.
The night goes on as I'm fading away. Unless you want that.
No, I just don't.
Oh, you did? Yeah, it's not worth the.
I drank my first sample.
And as far as I'm concerned.
Execute order 66.
Yeah. I know what grade that one's getting.
Let that one go.
Didn't hold up.
Goodbye. All right.
So,
farewell.
Now, when do you want to do? Because I brought, when I was recently in Maryland, I found green chartreuse for sale.
Let's
do that in the post show.
Okay.
Post show or at the end, either one. All right. So my original plan was like, let's get all beers that were available on the shelf in 2005. So I have beers in the fridge like Two Hearted Ale, Le Fin du Monde, Golden Monkey.
Mm-hmm. Golden Monkey was available back in 2005.
Yeah, sure was.
And there's one other
one. Well, I guess probably was.
But Greg made a good point that we just don't want to drink all the old beers. So we also pulled some.
Make for a crappy night.
These next three beers
exactly
are beers that Shannon and I brought back from different trips. So let's start with the trip from our most recent one from Seattle. We have Sacred Geometry from Holy Mountain Brewing Company.
Love Holy Mountain.
Can do. I think you need some more.
Love bottle. Holy Mountain.
Well, these are all different. I think that one might have been low.
Can we just say again, Holy Mountain is freaking awesome. We love Holy Mountain. Yes.
It was Shannon's first brewery visit.
Yes, it was.
Holy Mountain.
And we walked all the way from like downtown to get there.
So this guy.
It was not a short walk, but it was a beautiful walk.
Grid geometry.
On the 6% Pacific coast.
Blend of various oak aged mixed fermentation beers after blending is racked on top of a large amount of fresh raspberries from Spooner Farms in Puyallup, Puyallup.
Okay.
You got it close enough. Yeah.
Puyallup, Washington.
Yeah. That's...
Then went through a secondary fermentation on the fruit in freshly emptied red wine barrels.
Yeah. It's a beautiful.
Look at the difference in.
Beautiful color.
There's still
of,
a lot left like, in the bottle. I poured us just kind of a little
pinkish,
bit. So shouldn't have too much.
Reddish.
Okay.
Yeah, it almost looks like a rosé or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, rosé.
And the aroma is
ooh, sour.
Brett and raspberries. Like, yeah. You think it's like this super saturated fruit, but there's this leather strap in there, too.
Yes.
And there's then at the leather. End, It almost goes as a chocolate for me. Now, like, that's just like a nose overload thing. It's not like chocolatey going to be in the flavor or nothing. But like when I took a sniff, it was like leather strap, raspberries. Oh, chocolate cherries, you know, something like that. You know,
no, I'm not picking up on any chocolate.
It was just a fleeting thing. Maybe that won't ever come back.
Yeah, I'm definitely picking up on the raspberries. A little bit of like
rabbit poop.
Rabbit poop. When did you have rabbit poop? I'm just curious.
Oh, the other day I made a stir fry and found some at the Giant Eagles. Just, you know, rabbit poop. Yeah.
Really? That's awesome. Probably full of protein.
Probably not, because I think rabbits eat mostly.
Yeah, no. I was like, as soon as I said that, I was like, wait, no.
What kind of rabbits do you raise? The ones with very sharp, pointy teeth.
No, but there's a distinct, like, barnyardy.
Oh, yeah.
It's the barn.
The bread's funky.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my. It's definitely funky. I need to take some antacid.
There's like a cheese.
That's
like
different from the we had before.
There's a Limburger cheese.
Doesn't taste like rabbit poop anymore.
Yes. Yeah. There is. Yeah. That barnyard thing comes through in the flavor a bit too. It feels, dare I say, overbreaded.
Horse blanket.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some rabbit poop in here.
I don't think so, but I do think there's some leather in there. Leather that just came off of the saddle of a horse.
Sweaty.
Yeah, so very...
right out of the dominatrix's dungeon.
It's... I don't know.
Came through the desert on a raspberry horse.
It's definitely raspberry.
It's a lot. It's definitely a lot.
It's funky. It's got,
you know,
it's
we didn't
got
mention
the
that
funk.
It's got that huge sourness and big berry flavor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we were just talking on the more talking. We were fixating on the more gross parts of the flavor.
No, I like it because it's very bold.
I do think it's bold. I don't know if I like it that much. I
can't drink much of it. My stomach will not allow it. But I like the boldness of it. That funky bold, like, hey.
I'm with you in the sense
you're going to wake up when you take a sip of this.
Yes. I'm with you in the sense of, wow. Like, there's this is different, but it's not very tasty.
No, it doesn't have a, it doesn't blend well.
Yeah, it
I
almost
guess.
Needs cut with something.
Yeah.
Turn the volume up.
It does. It needs to be cut with something. It needs they need to put one more.
I just think there's too much. There's too much
there
bread. I just really think there's too much bread. I think that it's overbreaded. And I think that the bread has gone too far here. And what's weird is this is blended. So they wanted it to be like this.
Well,
that's a good point.
Aged in a oak barrel, so you're kind of taking your
well they should chances. They should have blended it at bottling time though.
Yeah,
well, okay,
so yeah, I don't know, like,
man,
it's been
I had
in
to
the
smuggle
for
that
two
in
years.
My suitcase too. That was a rough one.
Is there stuff on the bottom? Is it continuing for renting?
I don't know. The bottle's really dark.
It is very dark. Mm. I mean, we could shine a flashlight in it.
It certainly is. There's certainly sediment at the bottom.
Yeah. Here. So I...
There's still like that much beer in it too. So.
Oh, that's tough.
I gotta say...
Holy Mountain.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not as bad as the last one.
No. But this is clearly what they intended.
Yeah.
And don't know. It kind of tastes like shit.
It's a lot.
I just think that they needed to put one more thing in there to blend it and make it just kind of
clean
smoother
beer.
And
take the pH down a couple notches, you know?
Yes. Yes.
And I could go for a big sour, but when
it's not a Hill Farmstead.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's super tart, super acidic. It's funky Limburger cheese barnyard. It's just too much of all those things in the right proportions are just heavenly.
Mm-hmm.
This one is.
Or is it holy? Heavenly. Or...
It's holy because it's full of holes. No, I agree that, like, you know, Cindy Crawford has a mole, and that makes her even prettier because it breaks up the symmetry. But if you're covered with moles, you're less pretty. Okay. What's next?
Let's go to...
Oh, I gotta finish this first. I can't because it's going to hurt my stomach.
Yeah, I think this is a tough.
I hate to do that because it's a holy mountain, but I just can't because it's going to hurt me.
All right. So that's next we're going to go with this guy from 8th State.
That's the way.
8th State. So this is one Shannon and I picked up in Greenville, South Carolina.
On our last trip?
No, a while back.
We weren't even.
It was the time before we went to Asheville.
Another sour.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh,
6% mixed fermentation sour staved on oak and cherry wood with raspberry, blueberry, blackberry, tayberry, strawberry, vanilla, and marshmallow.
I need an essence.
Hope this one isn't a sour.
Probably is. We'll switch it out.
Definitely got to switch it out. I can't take it anymore.
All right. This one pours kind of still. Like, there's no apparent bubbles. Very clear. It looks like wine.
It does look like wine.
Yeah, I've got a lot of sediment.
It looks like sangria.
I've got a lot of sediment in mine.
Oh. Yeah, you do.
You weren't even close to the bottom of the bottle. There's still this much left.
Yeah, mine is not nearly as clear.
Here,
as
let's
yours.
Blend.
Yeah.
Let's blend.
Blendy blend.
But it does look like sangria, doesn't it?
It has, yes, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Or a winey fruit punch. And... we have done the blendy blend, so now we all have the same,
we have uniformity across our glasses. The smell on this one.
Oh, it smells like beautiful cherries.
Yeah, it doesn't smell like ridiculous tart like the last one.
No, it
There's
just smells like
the
really
big fruit
soft
thing
cherry.
Going on, kind of sweet, almost from with the combination of the view, it smells more syrupy to me,
like that's a cherry syrup.
Probably cause how still everything looks.
But there's also a wordiness there. Are you getting that wort in the background?
Mm.
Well, there's the marshmallows too. So I'm smelling kind of like a milkshake-y
thing.
Oh,
that's it.
No, but it just smells like, you know, you go into a brewery and the smell of just the malted barley. All those fruits are there.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah, it comes across kind of like...
That's
the marshmallow
lovely.
Definitely like takes it away from
being too sour.
Yeah,
it takes away from being sour.
It takes it
away from having
a smoothness.
Like there's so much fruit in this, and the marshmallow it kind of isn't obvious that it's a beer. You know, it's
no,
I wouldn't know that it was a beer if I was blindfolded.
Carbonation is really extremely low.
It is. I would swear it was a wine.
Like a fortified wine or something like mm-hmm. that. Or
yeah.
or mead or cider or something like that.
Oh, yeah,
you know.
A mead. That's actually what I would say it was.
Well, marshmallow is doing a lot of work here, and it's doing a good job. It's mellowing out everything.
They did a great job blending this.
Yeah.
And making it not tart at all. Not even a little bit.
I mean, we've had some tremendous beers from 8th State. The ones we brought back, the ones we had when we were there. They do a lot of field stuff. Like, I remember having a carrot beer, which was like almost like carrot cake, kind of, but not the spiciness, just more of like saturation of carrots. And
so this was not in barrels, this was staved.
Okay.
So that's one thing. So the wood is not a primary expression so much as kind of secondary. There's also vanilla, as I said in here
too. Oh, yeah, definitely vanilla. Yeah. That makes sense.
I dig it. I dig this a lot. I think this is really interesting and well done. I think particularly that marshmallow addition is really smart.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's so many berries in here. Raspberry, blueberry, blackberry, tayberry, strawberry. They're all going to drag you in different directions. I don't even know what tayberry tastes like. Mm-hmm. And marshmallow is kind of just surrounding it all and just bringing it and pulling it all together as sort of a more just, it just kind of tastes like a bunch of berries.
There are a lot of different flavors of berries in there, not just cherry. It's...
Yeah, it's a tasty drink.
Yeah.
Go great with ice cream.
It's kind of like a sangria, although not.
Yeah, yeah.
Sangria is not nearly as good as this, but it has that same type of a flavor profile as sangria does.
I agree. I think that
very fruity.
Think of a sangria with a little bit more like vanilla in it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you get a kind of approximation of what this beer tastes like.
Yeah.
And a sangria is not going to be 6%.
Mm.
So this is going to save your sobriety a lot more than a sangria will.
Sangria is still high even with all the other stuff added?
I'm pretty sure, yeah. I'm pretty sure it's
got a lot of sugar in it.
Like 12% or so, maybe.
I see. I thought the wine would start out at like 9 or 10 and then it would come down from there. But
who knows? Let's see. It's sangria.
I think it's about 6.5 or 7%. ABV. I think you're right, Jeff. I think it's lower.
Bottles which in the U.S. sugar. Usually have between 5% and 15%.
Yeah. That's a huge scale. Okay.
EU losses bottles from Spain are limited by law to less than 12% alcohol by volume. But I think that there's just a rough guideline between 5 and 15%. That's a lot. And okay, another senior sangria says typical sangria ranges from 7 to 10% alcohol, but it could be higher or lower.
Okay.
Senior sangria.
So basically, we really have no idea.
See, I don't even know what sangria is. Sounds like that's a wine you get from Spain. I thought it was like a punch that you make.
Well.
No, I believe it is. But it's like you can make a, they're purchasable.
Like premixes, yeah.
Well, like not premixes, but like, you know, this is
I've bought bottles of sangria before.
This winery makes their own sangria, which is a mix of, you know, it's a blend of wine and fruit. And
yeah.
Like that, so. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I'm seeing things between 10, 11. Here's one that's 6.5. So there's a lot of variety, it seems. This is on the low end of your sangria varieties.
So, Greg, you might remember how when we came back from the Finger Lakes, we signed up for that subscription for that Brewery Ardennes beer, the Belgian beer brewery we liked up there quite a bit. Got an email yesterday. They have an annual trip to Belgium.
Well, I don't think it's to Belgium every year.
It was to Germany location. One year, but usually it's Belgium. It's their beer venture. And, I think we're going to go. The price is pretty good.
We already paid the deposit, right?
We didn't pay the deposit.
You didn't pay the deposit today?
No, I'm still trying to get answers on the membership thing. We're going to go, okay?
I've already told everybody we're going.
Then we're going. We're going. But the price seems great. It's all inclusive, except for like, I guess, beers you want to, you know, drink or buy, you know, bring home or whatnot. Get to go to Cantillon and West Vlaanderen, and it's 8 days, and we fly out of Montreal, so we get to go to Duc de Sille also. And yeah, it seems pretty cool. And it's you know, I've been wanting to go to Belgium past 20 years, so this is
on your bucket
cool.
list for yeah. travels.
Yeah,
and we have a day we could go to Amsterdam.
The airfare is included.
Yes, everything: the airfare, the hotel, breakfast, some of the meals, and
breakfast is included. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's $2,900 for the members. Now, we only currently have one Chalice Club subscription. So that means for the other person, it would be $250 more. But we could get another Chalice Club subscription, which is about $420 a year. So, and then, we get the beer. Get double
quarterly.
Or, you know, we pay for the. If you live close to the brewery, there's a mug club type thing, which is $200. We can do that and save $50.
But we live 6 hours
never,
away.
Yeah, you'd never get to take advantage of the perk. So we'd just be saving the $50. So it's like save the $50 or pay an extra $160 and get
a lot of beer.
Beer for like half price.
Cool.
And they have great beer. So that's tempting.
Yeah, so that's cool.
So that's what we're trying to figure out. But yeah, no, in January.
Yeah.
It opens up for non-members on June 11th for anyone who wants to come along too. Or you can become a Chalice Club member at Brewery Ardennes.
Brewery Ardennes.
So that's cool. And that means I don't know.
We get to spend a day in Amsterdam too.
Really?
If we want to, that one day where we can tour the city that we're in, or we can take a bus over to Amsterdam and spend a day. I want to go to Amsterdam.
The red light district, yeah.
No.
Remember when we started the show, that was like, you could go to Amsterdam and smoke all the weed you wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like, well, you can smoke all the weed you want anywhere. And
yeah.
Pretty much anywhere.
So now you just go to Amsterdam for the hookers.
Yeah.
All right, then I don't want to go to Amsterdam. I want to go to Amsterdam because I want to go to Amsterdam, not for hookers.
The hookers are only in the red light district.
Jeez.
So we're still going to do this one because it's Oxbow, and Oxbow is...
Oxbow.
A transcendental brewery, so...
Okay, so let's talk about the Oxbow for a second.
Oxbow's in Portland, Maine.
Amaro di Malto is the name of the beer. This is a barrel-aged dark farmhouse. 9.5%. It is a... Oh, this will go well into the chartreuse and stuff because this is a brewed with and aged with 25 natural herbs and spices.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Which I think might be why they say Amaro, because Amaro is a fortified spirit that has a lot of spices. So,
oh, I did not know that.
Oof.
Do you have the more you know?
I don't know.
Oh, no. Man.
I'm sorry. I have something close to it. Let's see if what I can get that's close to it.
I like turtles.
Yeah, that's probably
I don't think that's it.
Good enough. Just go with that one. I like that one. That works.
Putting
words to this aroma is going to be a chore.
Oh, wow.
It smells like...
everything.
Franca, you know, what, Fernet Brancas.
Yeah,
yeah, something along those lines.
It's got a lot of anise. Like, that's the first thing
it smells. It does have anise.
Anise and fennel.
Clove.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of, it's a light, it's not heavy on the clove. It's very light on the clove.
No, I agree with you. I think there's a couple more. I think there's probably allspice in there, too.
It smells way better than it tastes.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Dang it, man.
Oh, yeah.
Is it because it's 3 years old?
No, I don't think so. I don't know. It does taste a little flat. Woody.
Ew. Oh, I feel like I just did. Yeah, low. Like I just chewed on a piece of wood.
Yeah, it tastes like a marrow.
What? Soggy wood.
That?
Oh.
Yeah, that tastes like Amaro.
Does it?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's got more sourness to it than Amaro does, and that's kind of weird.
It's almost like a, what are those green bottles that we get at the breweries?
The Underbergs.
Is that what they're called?
I think that's what they're called. The little aperitif you do, digestive.
The little green
Underberg, I think, is the name of it.
That's what it's reminding me of.
Yeah, I mean, those are typically, I mean, the idea is the bitterness makes your stomach, like, push stuff out so you don't get, like, stomach aches.
Is that what it's for?
Yeah. That's, like, what's original. That's what these, like, Amaro and Campari and stuff were originally designed for.
I need them the more you know again.
I like turtles.
I'm learning so much tonight. Don't think that was it either.
Who says that things don't get better with age?
Oh, hi, Mark.
Craft Beer Radio, 20 years on.
That's it did get better with age. Look at me.
Yeah.
I'm on the show.
It did get better. Mm-hmm. Yes. It's fucking crazy, Greg. What else have we, like, 20 fucking years?
I mean, you guys might actually get an Emmy next year.
That's right. Yeah, we're hoping to get nominated by the committee.
Yes,
we're not sending in anything, but
I'm pretty sure you're gonna get an Emmy.
I'm sure too. Yeah, I'm confident.
Mm-hmm.
There's not that many podcasts out there.
Yeah, no.
Nah.
And I mean, you know, who's heard of, like, who's this guy Conan O'Brien?
Yeah, Conan O'Brien.
Yeah.
O'Brien.
That's the nice thing about being, like, the oldest. You just have to be fucking stubborn.
Yes.
And stupid. And no one can take that away from you.
I mean, we're going to keep going until...
It's over 9,000!
Episodes. Mm-hmm.
Oh, we're not on pace to have the most episodes.
Once every 2 months.
The beerists have, like, hardly taken a break in all their time. I think they're past us in episodes, but...
That's fine. I don't think this is that bad. I think that... I mean, like, because I'm used to maybe the Amaro.
It's better. That first sip was jolting, though.
Flavor. But this is like a Amaro. But I don't know what the sourness is all about. But I think maybe that they just needed that to kind of tone it down.
I don't taste the sourness. I taste bitterness. And I swear it tastes like that.
Underberg, yeah.
Yes.
It's not as boozy. Underberg's super boozy, right? It's like 40% ABV or something like that.
Yeah,
is
yeah.
it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Holy shit. It's a good thing we only do that when we have the camper parked in the parking lot of the brewery.
So.
Wow.
While we're considering whether to pull another beer or not, I think you probably should.
Yeah.
We can pull another.
We also did it. We also got it on the, remember we did it in the airport on the way back to, from Seattle.
Seattle. Yeah, we did.
Had a good, we went to a brewery, but there's no parking nearby and it was a Friday night or something. So we parked at the grocery store, and in order to be a customer, we went inside and bought something from the convenience rack. She bought some gum or something, and, like, there was Underbergs right there. I'm like, so I bought, like, a 4-pack or 6-pack of Underberg, and we kept them. And then, like, on the rental car return shuttle bus, we
downed them.
Everyone's watching us while we're I think we drank them the way you're. The ceremonial way that you drink Underberg is you take the cap off, you hold it in your teeth, and you just turn your head back.
Yeah.
Did we do that on the
bus? Yes, we did that on the shuttle bus. Everybody was looking at us like we were crazy, and we didn't care. It was fine.
I kind of dig this. I kind of dig the fennel and stuff. I kind of enjoy it.
I'm getting used to it.
Yeah.
That first sip was such a jolt, though. It tasted like a piece of wood.
It did. I mean, I can drink it now
I'm getting all the different spices.
Now it tastes like spiced unsweet tea.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Like I said, unsweet tea, but like herbed and spiced unsweet tea.
Yeah, I think it's okay. One of those things where
I could take a lot like Earl Grey.
Yeah, a lot like Campari. I think it's, you get used to it and you start to then taste the dimensions in it.
I have to potty. Well,
we can pause.
You guys can keep on.
No, I want to pause because I have a question that for the group. Okay,
we're back.
So two things I wanted to talk about. First of all, I've been holding my knife wrong.
Mm-hmm.
The entire time I've been cooking, holding my knife wrong. And I learned, I guess I learned this probably somewhere around the beginning of the year, that you don't hold your knife like this.
Correct.
And what I have is my knife. It's kind of like a baseball bat or something like that.
You're holding it full on the grip, where that would be logically be how you hold a knife.
Mm-hmm.
That's what all your intuition would say.
All your intuition says that, but it's kind of unwieldy. So I was like, I was wondering why I wasn't getting good at knife skills.
Precision.
Hold it like this. Mm-hmm. This is where you hold it. You pinch the above the handle. And that's where pretty much all of your control is. The handle is really just there for stability. Mm-hmm. And it gives you so much more dexterity with the knife. It's so much easier to use that I'm just shocked at how I never knew that. And when I
hold like that.
Yeah. And when I got around to using it that way, it's just, it's just, that is... No.
Don't put your finger on top.
You do not put your finger on top.
Nope.
You pinch around.
I know, but I'm just telling you that a lot of times that I do that, but I do.
Yeah, no one would figure that out until a chef told you to do it.
I do hold it like above the.
Yeah, Alan Brown has a good reason why not to put your finger on top. I forget.
What is it?
It just lose stability.
It doesn't give you stability or control.
See, for me, it gives me more stability.
Helps you push harder on the dull knife.
No, it keeps...
Pinch. You have more control if you pinch it. Keep a pinch between your fingers.
What if you're... I can't do it with my left
hand. If you need to put like more pressure on the... Then probably you need a sharper knife.
Well, I don't need pressure, but I use it as a guide. My pointer finger is a guide.
I see that often, and I feel and I do think that it actually is you're more likely to cut yourself doing that.
Oh, I haven't cut myself with a knife in a long time, but I don't cook that much because Jeff likes to cook. So
I think
he's better at it.
I think there is the fact that if you cook, you're going to cut yourself. That's just you get into cooking, it's going to happen. But I do feel like. It's amazing how much that little tweak has improved my knife skills tremendously.
That's interesting.
It's funny when you hold a little paring knife that way, right? Because it's like most of the blade.
Yeah. Okay, so.
Oh, wait.
My second thing. I thought I was doing a word puzzle. I think it was a spelling bee. And
what is this?
Dark World. From Magnanimous Brewing Company in Tampa, Florida.
Let me look this up since we have this Dark World.
I didn't mean to interrupt you. I thought I missed
Barrel-aged Imperial Stout with vanilla.
I feel like we've had this before, right?
We had Death Mountain or something like that. Very similar, but different.
So this is a double Imperial Stout. Got the...
double what?
Ad.
It is a barrel-aged Imperial Stout with vanilla cacao nibs added.
Ooh,
smells!
I think
very
I picked
nice.
This out.
It's a Pritchard, Tennessee whiskey barrel and a Willett bourbon barrel, aged a year, 12%.
Hot dog! Wow. And this thing's been in our possession for probably 2 years.
Probably, we didn't go last time we were there.
So I was playing a spelling bee game, I think, and spelling bee's a game on the New York Times games, and. One of the words I thought might be the case. It wasn't, but the word tintinabulation didn't turn out to fit. But
that sounds sexual.
I came up with I remembered that word somehow.
That sounds sexual.
It's not. Here's the weird thing. Tintinabulation.
You're auditing or calculating. No? Yeah. No?
Okay. Tintinabulation is the ringing of a bell.
What?
The sound of the ringing of a bell is called tintinabulation. And when I thought about that, I was like, that's a big word for such a little thing.
Okay, wait. Is it the act of ringing the bell
the sound? The sound.
Okay. Tintinabulation. Well,
tintinabulation.
How did I learn that?
That's weird. I never equated
The tintinabulation of the bell or the
I understand that. Like, it's just the whole tabulate threw me.
It's not tabulation. It's tintinabulation.
Tintinabulation. Right. But how did I not learn that in music theory?
I don't know. And then that's why the full thing I had was tintinabulation and the oddities of language form and code switching. Because to me, tintinabulation is a big word for something that is for something that you could describe as the ringing of a bell, right? I mean, why would you make a word like that when the ringing of the bell takes just as much time?
Is it also?
Yeah, and much easier.
Mm-hmm.
Is it also like tuning forks? Is that tintinabulation?
That's what I think. Is I feel like, and I don't know for sure, and I wanted to wait until this to actually look it up, because I feel like that is probably where it came from. It probably came from like a scientific, you know, examination. So they wanted to expressly talk about not a bell, not the act of ringing a bell, but the sound that comes from ringing a bell. Mm-hmm. And if they're being very expressive about that, then they felt the need to create this word. But now I'm going to look up the origins of the word and we'll see what it actually came
right.
from.
Dun, right. dun,
well, Greg's doing his Googling. Let's talk about Dark World here. What do you think?
Well, I was letting it.
Yeah, it's a
become
cold.
A little more
the aroma,
room temperature.
The aroma
it's very boozy.
So far,
very boozy.
It's a good combination for me of roast and barrel and booze and vanilla.
Mm-hmm. And marshmallow. And dark chocolate.
Interesting.
Actually, not really dark, dark chocolate. It's kind of a medium dark chocolate. With some cherry.
Oh, it totally has marshmallow kind of vibes in the flavor. It's soft.
Oh, you already tasted it.
Heck yeah.
It's soft. It's not warm yet.
All the better reason to start tasting it.
Hmm. This is my type of beer.
Couldn't be more wrong.
Oh, no. Shit.
Tintinabulation, the ringing of a bell or bells, 1823 from the Latin. Tintinabulum, bell.
Tintinabulum, bell.
Oh, those fucking Greeks.
So it can, no, it's Latin.
No, Latin.
It's fucking Romans.
It's fucking Romans.
Oh, that's beautiful.
So not that tintinabulum comes from tinier, to ring, plus the instrumental suffix bulum.
Mm-hmm.
So there, it does make sense from a, I guess, perspective of your Latin speaker, why you'd have a long word for that, because you add bulum to something and that makes an instrument. So, mm-hmm. And then tintinere, whatever is to ring. So ringing instrument. Tintinab, and then to, I guess, make it into sort of English, adding the Asian.
Okay.
Weird, huh? Isn't language weird?
I'm just wondering why tinnitus is so short, and why isn't tintinabulitis?
Tintinabulitis. Well.
Well, I mean, the thing is, like, yeah, because you can clearly see that tinnitus, you know, comes from that, from that mm-hmm. root.
Because it's not a bell, maybe. That's why.
The bulum comes from the instrument, so you wouldn't have that. But why tin? Why not tin? Because, well, so the tin ear is just ring, so it's just one. But tin air is to ring or jingle. They say a reduplicated form of tin ear.
Tin. There's so many tin tins that you should make a rap.
I wonder if Tintin came from a bell, like that character name.
I don't know, but you should create a rap song.
I should create a rap song
about Tintin.
Where's the gummies at,
Tintin
tinnitus. Where's the gummies at? You're holding out on us here.
I don't know. It's just he's going on about the Tintins and all the itises and
all the Tintins and the win-wins and the pin-pins.
Yeah. Make it up. Let's go.
That'd be a fun. Yeah, why?
It's me,
why
Mario.
Okay, yeah. Why this? Oh, we're getting totally posho here. Why was Tintin the name selected for the dog in The Wizard of Oz?
What?
Isn't that what you're talking about?
No, Tintin. There's a character. No, the name of the dog is Toto.
Right? Yeah, Toto.
Oh, yeah.
What's I knew Tintin, Tintin was
What's
wrong.
Tintin then? Where's that from?
I feel like there's a character named Tintin.
It sounds familiar. Familiar enough that I thought it was The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, The Adventures of Tintin. It's it's this looking guy. This guy was like a cowlick.
Don't know.
I don't know. There's a lot on here, and who knows if it came from that at all.
What do you say we go over to? We're really like just.
Well, we haven't rated.
Yeah,
we haven't so rated. We can't go to
post
show.
Didn't we talk about this before? That the main show and the post show are basically the same thing.
Okay. All right.
Well, I think we should rate.
I haven't even tasted this one yet.
Oh, you taste?
He's been working too hard tintinabulating.
Tintinabulating.
That's a really deep, dark roastiness.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a bit of that marshmallow.
Marshmallow, cherries, chocolate.
Mm. Ooh, and the it's got that hug at the end, too, that you like.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes almost kind of a raisiny, chocolatey note, like you said, cherry.
Yeah, dark chocolate not a dark chocolate.
No, but like a
dark chocolate, like a medium dark chocolate with cherry.
Mm.
It's very boozy.
Mm-hmm.
It's just very.
No, that's pretty dang
perfect.
Good. That's pretty dang good.
I tried to blend. Jeff's, I don't think I made it better though.
Jeff's. Tinning.
I added that
he's,
berry
he's
one.
Tinning.
Added just a little bit of the
Why?
Berry one to it. Because I thought it would be this berry.
Oh, because it's got the cherry
and
marshmallow.
Oh, the berry and marshmallow
yeah.
one? Not the berry and rat turd one.
Not the rat turd one.
Okay.
No, not the kind of one.
Let's dump some farm on this one.
Speaking of rat turds.
Let's judge.
I have some robins nesting right outside my window. I get to watch them all day.
Mm-hmm.
And they're
While
probably
going
to fledge in probably like two or three more days. But they started out really small and you could just barely see their heads peeking over the rim of the nest when they were feeding them. And I was watching them, they'd get fed all the time. And every once in a while you'd see two instead of three. I'm like, oh, is one going to die? That's very drama. I like it. But every once in a while I'd see them feed the worm. And then I'd see this peak of this white stuff that the mama would have in its mouth. And I thought maybe it was regurgitation or something like that. I couldn't. Then I realized it was going the other direction. I'm like, what the fuck is that? So I get on the internet, and apparently, nestlings, as soon as they eat, they poop. Like it's a one for one. They'll eat, 10 seconds later, they poop.
Just like
when,
you.
I don't think I'd poop 10 seconds after I eat. You'd be very busy because I'm going to talk about the rest of the process right now.
I'm kidding.
So when nestlings poop, they have a fecal sac. So everything's encapsulated in this like hard-ish pill-shaped thing. And the process is the parents, and both parents are doing duty feeding these chicks, right? Drops the food off, stands there, waits the 10 seconds. And as the birds got bigger, I could see this more and more clearly. Bird sticks his butt up in the air, poops out a fecal sac, and the mama or daddy gets it right when it comes out of their butt.
Before it hits the nest.
Right. And they either fly it away to dispose of it, or they eat it, depending on if there's still a bunch of nutrients because their digestive systems aren't very good. So I've been watching adult robins eat baby bird shit for a week now, and that's a mood.
And he has a video.
I mean, no, it sounds like a very reasonable thing to evolve because you want to keep the nest clean.
Yeah. There's every once in a while, like there was one time where a baby bird mama picked up one of the fecal sacs and flew away, and another bird pooped like in the thing. And a little later, I see like every once in a while see mama or dada like really being meticulous in the bottom of the nest, pecking, 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 pecking. I think they're eating poop like that's popped and like is all over the bottom of the nest. So,
yeah.
And just getting rid of it because
babies stick their butt up and shoot the shit right into mama or papa's mouth.
I mean, the thing is, if you're a robin, you only have to do that for a couple of weeks and then you don't even care about your kids at all.
Yeah. I mean, so. You like, I love my kids, but to only have to clean Robins, up shit and take really, care of really, them really for care, a couple of weeks.
They really care about their kids for a while and then.
And then boom, gone. One flew over the cuckoo's nest.
The I want to know what the dada was doing between like he was around a little bit during nest building and he was like he was
right
pieced,
after feeding.
He was pieced out until the eggs hatched and then he's been on full duty, but like he wasn't hanging around the nest too much other than
So they actually like spit out their poop instead of going through the clay. They
no, that was the butthole.
No, that came out of
his
butt.
That was
the butthole. They stick their butt up in the air after they eat.
Okay, it looked like a. Let me look closer. Okay, so I see the birds eating her.
They do the whole begging thing, and the one ate. You know, and about 10 seconds later,
there's the butt. Yeah. There's the
okay.
There's the poop shoot.
Okay,
cloaca.
And well, then and so the nice thing about bird. Shit and bird pee is it's all one thing. They'll come like that's not like just like Marat trials, right? The pee is a kind of solid white thing. That's the urates.
And, but the birds it lands all over our vehicles.
Yeah. Yep. Birds poop a lot.
Yes, they do.
They have high metabolism. They have they are ectotherms like we are. So they poop a lot.
That's why I'm a firm believer that birds do not belong in the house. Not mine. I don't care if you have birds in yours, but
I think birds are probably some of the hardest things to take care of in the animal
I don't kingdom. Think that they should be in captivity. I think that they should be free.
I don't know if I buy that. Like as a blanket rule, I think it's fine for like a big macaw or something to be with. They like socialization.
I mean, yeah, they're but still though they're.
Remember we went to that winery up in Seattle.
And oh, that was crazy. That
there was.
It this, wasn't a macaw.
It was whatever big white parrot thing. And
shoot,
the thing was in the winery tasting room. And
screaming.
Was she, I can't remember the story. Was she watching it for the owners?
She was watching it for the owners. And if it couldn't see her, it screeched.
And it screeched at like 130 decibels. Like,
yeah, no, birds insane. Are like, there are two things about birds. One, birds are very, very social. So you kind of have to be, they're a lifestyle, not a pet that you can like, they're not like reptiles. Mm-hmm. They are a lifestyle. You have to, even more than dogs, you're living with your bird constantly.
And the bird's going to outlive you.
Yes.
Some of them, mate. And the other thing is that they're also really easy to kill.
That's a good thing. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that out loud.
Get their conditions wrong a little bit. They can go into shock. Mm-hmm. Cook some Teflon near them.
Yeah,
they can die. They're just not like I think that birds can be amazing like companions in some ways, but yeah, not for me. I would never
not
want to put that kind of work into it.
Nope. And I don't know. I think I love to see them flying around free. Mm-hmm. I just don't like to see any bird in a cage.
Well, I mean,
I don't like it. I don't think that's not what they were.
I've seen stuff like of people who keep birds very humanely and.
Well,
and
yeah, no, I agree. I personally feel like they should be able to fly freely and not be in a cage, regardless.
I don't care
how
fly, they just don't like to.
Exactly, but birds do. That's their purpose in life.
Chickens are
no, well, they are, yes, but they're very different in the way, in the fact that, like, birds do like to fly. They want to be out. They want to be free. They want to be...
I don't know. I think that some, like, a bird, if it's raised in it with a human, it wants to be with a human.
I mean, chickens are that case in particular. Like, it's advantageous for them to hang out around the farm. They don't generally, like, you've seen chickens, like, at that place in West Virginia, right? They're just... They could have fucked the fuck
they
off if they
fly.
Wanted to.
They're fully
but
capable.
But they didn't, you know? It's just like the dogs. Like, our wolf that lives in the living room there finds it advantageous to hang out with us, you know?
So, that's well, because of food.
The dog fucking loves you. That's a different
thing. He's food motivated, too.
He loves food, too. But he is loyal as heck to you. And in a way that other animals are not. It's
a different degree of living around humans is beneficial.
It's a very different thing with dogs. I think the only thing that comes anywhere even close, from what I understand, I've never even seen it, but I have heard that it's true, is fancy rats can be just as, like, loving and...
But they are so hard to take care of.
I mean, rats hustle poop a lot, but the big problem is they have really great personalities, apparently. They're really cute, very loving, and they die in 2 years.
And they need... an exorbitant amount of attention.
You can't have a rat without having a second rat, because otherwise the rat will die of loneliness. Yeah, yeah. It's that. Yeah, they have to have a companion at the very least. So you can't get one rat. Yeah, you get at least two. And you got to be prepared for...
If you're getting two, you might as well get six.
And you got to be prepared for that crushing, because you're going to be really attached to these rats because they have a lot of personality. They will be able to do tricks. They're really smart. And then they're going to die in 2 years because they're rodents, and that's what rodents do. And so, yeah, that really sucks. But if you're okay with that kind of commitment, I do think that, from what I understand, they make really great pets.
Yeah, they do. If you can deal with the smell and cleaning up
the
shit.
Yeah, you got to clean constantly.
Daily.
They are not a potty trained animal.
Daily.
Mm. Very tasty. Okay, so let's scoot past this and just do a fuck, marry, kill. What do you say?
Okay. Oh, that all works. Right.
Okay. Let's, do you have an idea yet, Greg?
Yeah, yeah. So I'm going to fuck this one that we just had, because, I mean, it's the best of the lot, I think. Although, well... Yes, I will fuck this one, and I'm going to marry the berry marshmallow.
Okay.
Because we will balance. I think that you could have that a lot and get and then you could use it in a lot of different things.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not going to... Part of me wants to kill the 90 minute, but I still think that that's not what I remember, so I'm going to kill the rat poop.
Okay. Works out. I am going to... I got to marry the Elliot Ness. Right. I'm going to...
The what?
Which Elliot one? Ness. For two.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to fuck the... Jeez, I don't know.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I guess the Dark World. And I'll kill the Holy Mountain. Same as Greg.
I'm going to fuck the Dark World that we just had. I am going to marry, interestingly enough, according to my stats here, I'm going to marry the Elliot Ness.
Okay.
And I am going to kill the 90 minute.
And if you could, if you take the 90 minute out of...
If I took the 90 minute out, then I would kill the Holy Mountain Sacred Geometry.
All right.
All right. Cool.
Which is sad because...
All right. So that was...
That's a wrap. 20 years for you guys, not for me, but for you guys. Congratulations. That's a huge, huge...
We did it. Just like we planned, right?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe not exactly as you planned. The pandemic kind of put a damper on things. Divorce kind of put a damper on things. But you
life
made
happens,
it through.
You know. The beer industry as a whole kind of put a damper on things.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things we didn't really get into too much. But, there's a lot of things. We went through peak craft beer, I think, and it's going to never be the same. So, we'll see.
Nothing's ever the same.
No.
Everything's ever changing.
So listen in post-show, because we're going to do a chartreuse versus the kind of the Luxard or new chartreuse, the green stuff, and...
And talk about more shit.
And talk about more shit.
Yeah.
See ya.
Out.